In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
That's right, Alan is here for The Main Edge, Pass the Popcorn. Brought to you every Monday by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, 557 Stillwater Avenue, where they have a film for everyone in the family. Hello, Mr. Adams.
Hello, hello. How's it going?
Good, good. How was your weekend?
Oh, it was good. It was good. Busy, but good.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, it's the first weekend I've had to myself in like 3 months.
Right.
So it's like, yeah. So it was a little confusing at times, but for the most part, it was good.
Sheridan looking at you like, why are you in the house? Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it's you know, it was one of those things where she spent she spent the first 3 months of the year bemoaning the fact that I wasn't going to be around very much, and she got over that pretty quickly. I think she realized that she had it pretty good, and now she's got to look at me just sort of sitting there like a lump and be like, oh, right,
yeah, you. I remember this. Yeah,
it's you.
Well, you got out of the house enough to see three movies this weekend. Where do we begin?
I did. I don't know. Where do you want to start? Like I was telling you off air, saw a couple of pretty good ones and one that left me wanting a little bit.
Well, let's talk about Blockers, because Mike Lowe already dissed the trailer, but you say the trailer doesn't do this film any justice.
Yeah. And I totally get where Mike's coming from, because it is the trailers are pretty brutal for this movie. It is surprisingly fun in that sort of Apatovian kind of vein. It has its share of the gross out humor and the curse words. Like, this is a hard R movie. Like, don't be taking your 10-year-old thinking that, taking children to this movie is a mistake. It was really pretty funny. It's basically two stories told in parallel. You've got a group of high school girls, making a sex pact, as it were, to give it up on prom night. Like that's what they're planning to do. With the one's got a long term boyfriend. One's just like, yeah, I want to do this. And the third is sort of having some questions about some things, but figures, you know what? What the hell? I'm gonna give it a go too. Meanwhile, their parents. You've got the single mom, played by Leslie Mann. You've got the amiable lunkhead stay-at-home dad, played by John Cena, and the not quite reformed party animal divorced dad, played by Ike Barinholtz. These parents get wind of their daughter's sex pact and decide that they're going to stop it. And that's really it. Like, it's like the stories play out in parallel. We follow the kids for a while, then we follow the parents as they follow the kids for a while, back and forth. And it's, again, I don't know who made the decisions as far as marketing this movie is concerned, because it is so much, sweeter and more genuine than you're led to believe by those movies. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot of gross stuff that happens over the course of this movie, but it's all, it never feels super gratuitous. Like it's there, but it's not, it doesn't just come out of nowhere. Like, it happens organically, literally in some cases, and the performances are really strong. Leslie Mann's great. Like, she's someone, the sort of harried, put upon mom is a part that she was born to play. Ike Barinholtz is always funny. I get a big kick out of him. Cena was a big surprise. Like, he's a guy who I feel like he doesn't have a ton of range. Like, there's not a whole lot of breadth to what John Cena brings to the table. But if you find him, if you can land him in that spot, there's an undeniable sort of sincerity about the guy, genuineness.
He's got a likable presence.
You know what I mean? And like, if you put him in these sorts of supporting roles where you can sort of both take advantage of and subvert the fact that he's, WWE superstar John Cena, putting him in these incongruous situations while also being able to utilize the skill set that he brings to the table. Like, he could be really good. Like, the three of them together are really good as well. The three young ladies who are who play the teenage girls are also excellent. I don't remember their names offhand. They're no one super familiar to me. Although I will say there's one sort of teen trope, type of character that I don't think I've ever seen in one of these movies before. A young lady, you know, it's sort of an Indian American foul-mouthed jock type that just, you know, kind of surprising. And she was very good. But I mean, again, just across the board, it was really funny. And it's regrettable that the marketing campaign may have cost them a few eyeballs here on opening weekend.
All right, that's the story on Blockers. How about Chappaquiddick?
You know, I'm not super familiar with the Chappaquiddick story. I mean, I have a baseline level of understanding of the circumstances. For those who are unaware, July of 1969, after a party held on Chappaquiddick Island off Martha's Vineyard, Ted Kennedy drove off a bridge into a pond, and his passenger at the time, a young lady by the name of Mary Jo Kopechne, drowned as part of the accident. This movie basically revisits that weekend and takes us along not only through the accident but the aftermath as well. And we get to see one particular version of these events as they played out. I'm a firm believer that particularly in a situation like this, there was exactly one person who knew what actually happened, he didn't necessarily have a whole lot of interest in revealing all of that truth, and that's Ted Kennedy. So this version of events, I kind of was expecting it to be a little bit of a hit piece, like really like going for it, and you could kind of feel the movie sort of jerking towards that kind of situation, but never really having the stomach to go for it, and so it just wound up being sort of dull, like kind of bland, boring, like a recounting of events that while they took great pains to paint Teddy Kennedy as both kind of an egomaniac and sort of an idiot. Like he was both very prideful and very stupid, basically throughout all of his actions over the course of the film. And I mean, his real life actions didn't necessarily reflect particularly well on him back in the day. But otherwise it was just kind of like, I don't know why this movie is necessary. Like, it didn't add anything to the conversation. And if you're going to make a movie like this about something like this, like, you need to add something to the conversation. We don't need a sort of, a dramatization of what we already know. The performances were all right. Jason Clarke was actually a pretty good Ted Kennedy.
How did our buddy Gary Tangway do?
Tangway was good. Yeah, it was funny because I had forgotten that he was in the movie, and then he pops up and I'm like, oh, hey, that guy. But yeah, no, he was great. Ed Helms and Jim Gaffigan are both in this movie. They're both very good. Kate Mara, who's wonderfully talented, for obvious reasons, doesn't get a ton to do as Mary Jo Kopechne, but she's great. Surprising scene stealing turn from Bruce Dern as Joe Kennedy.
Old Joe.
Yeah, yeah. Like, after the, post stroke and really, but it was really a very compelling performance. He's only in a couple of scenes, but he really does a great job.
All right. The one I really want to hear about. I'm so excited to see this movie. I was going to say it sounds great. And maybe I will go with that. Thank you very much. John Krasinski directed A Quiet Place.
Yeah, I was very curious about this movie going in. I had some preconceived notions about how it was going to go. Like, I knew the basic conceit. We're in a sort of, I keep calling it like post-apocalyptic. That's not quite right, but some sort of invasion has happened, and there are these creatures that are basically hunting down mankind, and they hunt by sound. That's how they find you. And so the people who have survived have very quickly found ways to adapt to a largely soundless existence. We meet this family. It's where the bulk of the story takes place, like well over a year after the first event or whatever, which is never really defined. Like, we never really figure out what happened, like how we got to this place, which is one of the, that's actually a favorite tactic of mine when it comes to these sorts of movies. Like, I'm perfectly happy to fill in the blanks myself. Like, there are some, you know, some scattered details here and there, and you could piece together a pretty good idea of a timeline and stuff like that. But I don't need to be spoon-fed explanations, and Krasinski's done a great job of not doing that, which is great. But it follows this one family, the Abbotts. You've got the dad, played by Krasinski, who stars as well as directing, and he also worked on the screenplay as well. His wife, played by his real life wife, Emily Blunt, and their kids, as they sort of try to eke out an existence on this sort of compound that they've set up in the middle of the woods. And it's everything is designed to minimize sound. So you've got everything is padded. They've marked all the floorboards and stuff, so it's like, you know, where all the spots are where you can step without, you know, making a board creak, or, you know, they remove doors so doors can't slam. Their compound is just sort of crisscrossed with these paths they lay down of like beach sand. Like, they make paths of sand so they can walk. Nobody wears shoes. They're all barefoot. Like, it's a very richly realized sort of considered world that they live in. But in situations like this, all it takes is a single mistake, and things go horribly awry. And when the time comes and we learn that that the wife is pregnant, certain realities become very apparent, because leaving aside the idea of a soundless delivery of a baby, infants aren't necessarily known for their quiet. And so you have all these circumstances conspiring to kind of be against the survival of these people. The remarkable thing about it is, with one very brief exception, all the dialogue is ASL. It's American Sign Language. And there are subtitles, so it's like, so you know what people are saying. But that's how they communicate. Wow. Like, the eldest daughter was deaf before the event, so they all know sign language, and so that's how they communicate with each other now that they can't talk. So there's, you know, and there's all this, there's this thing about where the dad is trying desperately to reach out and find other survivors by way of like a ham radio, you know, and in his off time he's trying to rig up some sort of device to allow his daughter to hear, because again, like, hearing is one of the most valuable, you know, senses when you're in this sort of situation. But yeah, there's only one moment of dialogue. There's only one moment of music that is that is perfectly wonderful within the context of the story that I'm not going to spoil. But yeah, it's so good. Like, it's so tense.
And because of that, I've seen a couple of comments that you need to see this in a theater full of other tense people.
Yeah. Well, it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, you go to the movies and when things start, there's a lot of crunch, 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 wrinkle, 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 you know, shift, shift, shift. And that all just like within minutes, it just vanished. Like, everyone was just like, you know, we can't, like, you don't want to make a sound because you don't know if you're going to miss something. Yeah. And, you know, the performances are excellent. I'm a believer in the less is more school as far as like movie monsters in these sorts of things. I think maybe they go to that well maybe once too often, which is fine. I mean, the effects work is fine. Like, it's nothing, you know, it doesn't blow you out of the water, but it's certainly good enough. But really, the fact that they're able to generate such wonderful tension and such an engaging and coherent story without talking, like, it's just such a it's such an odd thing to think about. It's such a big swing, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's such a huge chance to take in terms of making a movie. You know, and I had heard some things about how this script was actually at one point optioned to be like folded into like the Cloverfield cinematic universe or whatever, repurposed for that, but they instead decided to go ahead and make it as a standalone movie. And, you know, good for them, because they basically made back 2.5 times yep. their budget in their opening weekend. I don't think anybody expected it to blow up the way it did, but it's just I mean, it's great work from Krasinski. It's the kind of thing where you're like, okay, we might be seeing something right now. Like, this might be like an indicator of greater things to come from him as a director, mm-hmm. because it's really a well-made movie. And, you know, making this kind of movie well is difficult. Like, it's certainly indicative of someone who's got real movie-making chops.
Cool. A Quiet Place. Alan Adams breaking it all down here on Pass the Popcorn. Thanks, Alan.
My pleasure.